The exhibition celebrating the Sikandjo Lakota artist. Tickets at walkerart.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here. Glad to have you along as well. Well, we're heading into the home stretch for the 2025 election season, and I'm pleased to focus today on an important election in Minneapolis. I've been talking to and watching the candidates for 5th Ward. I live in 5th Ward. Our newspaper is based in 5th Ward. It's an important sort of a pace-setting ward for the city of Minneapolis, and I'm pleased to have candidates for 5th Ward on the program today. I start the program with an interview I did a couple of hours ago with one of the candidates, Pearl Warren, and clip with her will be in the studio, Eutropic Burnett and also Andrea Young. We're expecting two additional candidates to join as well. But let's begin by jumping in on the interview I did a couple of hours ago with Pearl Warren. Play that, would you, please? I'm Al McFarland, and my guest is Pearl Warren. She is a candidate for 5th Ward Minneapolis City Council. Pearl, good afternoon. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Let me note that we're pre-recording this interview because of schedule conflicts, so thank you for taking the time to do a one-on-one with me, which will air on KFAI today at 1 o'clock. Introduce yourself if you would.
Thank you so much, Mr. McFarland, for this opportunity to interview with you today and for being flexible in your schedule. My name is Pearl Warren, and I am a candidate for Minneapolis City Council Ward 5. Currently, I am the financial coaching manager with Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity in our homeownership development department, where I spearhead our Advancing Black Homeownership program, in addition to working with the multitude of families in order to build homeownership sustainability. So safe, suitable, and sustainable housing is very important to me. I also am a champion for economic development and livability here in Ward 5. I aim to ensure that there are clear pathways to business ownership and business development amongst our community members so that we can recycle our dollar throughout the community and balance out the tax burdens here in Ward 5. I'm also passionate about our public safety with improved livability and economic development that will also help to improve our public safety here because people will feel safe shopping, working, playing here in the ward, working very strategically with our public safety officers, our mental health response teams, and domestic violence response teams to ensure that individuals have what they need here in the ward, and also creating pathways for our young people to also feel very connected with community. Constituent services is equally as important to me because this job is about servitude. It's legacy work. So it's creating those authentic relationships with community members, working with our neighborhood boards and organizations, and ensuring that we have the pathways to magnify the voices of community in rooms that we do not frequent. So that is some of my platform and plans there, Mr. McFarland. Did that answer your question in introduction?
obviously. The first one is, how did you come to your background? What brings you to the point where you decide that you have an opportunity and a desire to serve the ward in elected office?
I'm going to ask that you repeat that question, Mr. McFarland, because we broke up a little bit, so I didn't hear it.
Now, why did you decide to run for office?
Well, I have a lot of lived.
Meaning, what's your personal story? How did you get here? How did Pearl arrive at deciding to throw her hat in the ring?
How did I get here? Well, my family moved to Minneapolis here in 1980. So I have been a resident of Minneapolis and lived in North Minneapolis about 20 plus years. And I just bring a lot of lived experience to the table. I saw our city change in its entirety. Beyond the pandemic and the civil uprising, there's a lot of changes that have happened in the city. And, you know, it sparked my curiosity of what things that I can do to help instrument sustainability for our city. I looked at my lived experiences and my professional background and, you know, said, hey, this would be some things that I can offer in servitude to my community on a larger scale and really help move us forward. So I've been a lead literacy intervention specialist with Minneapolis Public Schools. I taught with Minneapolis Public Schools for 6 years. I held a community expert teacher's license for 8. My background is in finance and financial management, insurance. I've held multiple financial licensing, was a district assistant manager for American Family Insurance, just a plethora of things in Hennepin County, Foster. You know, I've done a lot of work with the City of Minneapolis Youth Coordinating Board for youth outreach and intervention, creating pathways for our young people to improve their accessibility and also working strategically with the families to build stability. So I felt like that would be a wonderful contribution to our council, being that we are at the precipice of change.
So I'm interested in your sense and your assessment of change. What was the city like? What is it like now? And what do you want it to be? That's the final question. But give me a landscape view. You said you noticed the city has changed a lot in the time that you've been here. Talk about that and describe what it is now and what you want to build.
I saw a lot of thriving businesses in North Minneapolis, like growing up, especially knowing, I mean, I performed at Family Day when on Plymouth Avenue, when McDonald's was right there at the corner of Plymouth and Penn Avenue. And we had the stage set up and Snow Foods was there. And we had all, you know, businesses were thriving. There were a lot of businesses up and down our Olson Memorial Highway corridors. I remember being at Juneteenth at Oak Park in my childhood, the things that, you know, going to Butter Roll Bakery that was right there on Broadway when we walked my cousin to her bus stop, you know, different things that I experienced here that I no longer see. And I know that if we had the businesses that, you know, development here in the ward, that those things would definitely bring back the instrument of community here in North Minneapolis, and people would feel very connected. We used to have all kinds of restaurants and stuff up and down Broadway where people could go in and sit down at counters and eat. And, you know, we don't have those things anymore. And those are things that we definitely need. Those are businesses that need to be flourishing throughout the ward here in order to build that community connectedness so that people have the opportunity, again, to live, work, and play, to be inspired, to feel connected. Our young people would have jobs. You know, it would be a lot more brick and mortar instead of just, you know, here. Just we're at a deficit. You know, we need more pharmacies. We only have one inside of Cub Foods, you know, that closes at an early time. You know, we're missing a lot of amenities that help our seniors to age in place, that help our young people to feel connected. and help to balance the tax burden and recycle dollars throughout our community. And we deserve that. We do. It's a beautiful place. There's a lot of love and legacy here in North Minneapolis, and it deserves to be magnified. This is a great mosaic gateway, and it should be treated as such.
Per Warren, thank you so much. Good luck in your campaign.
Thank you so much, Mr. McFarland. I appreciate your time.
Take care. Thank you. Pleased to be able to bring that interview to you as part of this program. With me in studio are three additional candidates for 5th Ward. Ethropic Burnett is here, Miles Wilson is here, and Andrea Young is here. We may be joined by another candidate before the hour is over. But I want to take the time to allow each of these candidates to introduce themselves to you as well. Our listeners here on KFAI and those who are monitoring the program across any of our social media platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and LinkedIn, I believe. So let me go first to Ethropic Burnett. Ethropic, thank you for being here. And let me note that I saw you at the Insight office a few weeks ago. I was concerned about a vacant property next door to the Insight office on Bryan Avenue. And it's a place where it's developing into a homeless encampment. And you came up, approached me and asked what the story was, and I shared with you. And you said that that's a priority for you to address the question of homelessness in our community. Welcome to the program. Introduce yourself and talk about that if you want to, but anything with our listeners and viewers about your candidate to be the next 5th Ward City Council member.
Well, thank you, Mr. McFarland. Thank you for having me here today. Yes, my name is Ethropic Burnett. Most people know me as E. A lot of people call me HE, right? And I am the candidate for the 5th Ward City Council. I am excited to be here today and to share with you and your listeners of who I am and why I'm running. I am a current city employee. I've been with the city of Minneapolis now for 8 years. I came in with former council member, 4th Ward council member Philippe Cunningham as one of his associates and then later became one of his aides. And prior to me coming to the city of Minneapolis, prior to that, I worked at Urban Homeworks, right? Which is now Housing in Action. And did a lot of work with tenants, a lot of work with tenants empowerment, tenant engagement, connecting my community members to their resources, whether it was the park board, the school board, whatever it was, whether we had to have conversations with senators and representatives, getting out the vote and understanding that. So I bring to this office as having an understanding of what it means to be a community member, what it means to be a bridge for community members to their resources and understanding what happens at City Hall, what happens at community planning, economic development, regulatory services, neighborhood community relations, how our tax dollars are spent within the budget, right? So right now, currently, there's an increase in our property taxes, right? So for me, my job is to come back and make sure I engage prior to or after the mayor's recommendation budget and say, hey, 5th Ward resident, 33,000 plus, this is the mayor's recommend budget, and this is what we need. Tell me what the services I've been hearing you guys telling me for last year so I can go into there these next 3 months and advocate for that within that budget and see what that looks like so that we can get our resources and needs met. So I bring to this job the experience of not having just to work in community for the last 15 years, but also having the background and understanding of policy and how to connect that and make that policy work. I've had the privilege of being able to be under Dr. Sam Myers and do a lot of his policy classes, thanks to former Mayor Shales Belden pushing me through that. And I'm very grateful to have that understanding and have that connectionness and being able to even learn more in the municipal government within the city. But more importantly, how we get our needs met intergovernmental, across government agencies, right? Because it's not just the city. We are, the city is a municipality. How do I work with Hennepin County Commissioners, Irene Fernando? How do I work with the school board, right? How do I work with the park board? How do I work with our state rep, Esther Abaje and Fuli? How do I work with Senator Champion and Congresswoman Ilhan Omar to make for sure that the Fifth Ward not just have his resources with the municipality, but also state and region wide as well, and have those conversations and being able to have those partnerships, you know, knowing that we're not going to always agree on everything, but one thing we probably all agree upon is that the Fifth Ward deserves these resources and these conversations need to be had. And we all need to stand together collectively to make that happen. To answer your question about a couple of weeks ago, sir, I was doing a ride-along with MPD. I've done ride-alongs before, as I stated, with Councilman Cunningham, but this time for myself, as someone who is seeking to serve in a different capacity than what I have been serving in the last 8 years, I have to have understanding of all things, right? I just cannot have the understanding of what it looks like from my view as a resident, but what does it look like from the view of our first responders, right? And so for me, I took that initiative and made for sure that I wanted to see what does it look like for our first responders to respond within my ward. And so when I saw you last week, I was doing my ride along with the day shift, MPD, and you know, we know there's a lot of livability issues that we are facing as a nation, first and foremost, right? With this fentanyl epidemic, it has taken us all over, right? And this is not new to me. I'm a 70s baby. This is not new to me. I remember when my dad and my uncles and them came home from Vietnam War addicted to heroin, right? And heroin was in our neighborhood pretty prevalent. So it's the same form of opiate drug. So when I saw you, I knew, you know, we was doing our ride along about where are our livability issues and concerns are at and how. And it is associated with fentanyl and substance addiction, homelessness, our unhoused community, our mental health, and also people that perpetrate that, right? There are certain community members who are out there and they take advantage. Just like we have property owners who take advantage of tenants, we also have community members who take advantage of our unhoused community and mental health and substance addiction. And so for me, I wanted to see that firsthand from a first responder's view so that I'll be able, as an elected official, be able to address some of the inequities and address that in a different way, what's needed. Yes, I saw the cause of BCR. I understand BCR because I worked in violence prevention. I had the privilege of working in violence prevention in 2020 when COVID hit. And then I got assigned to the aftermath and working on the murder of George Floyd with the Office of Violence Prevention with Sasha Cotton, Director Sasha Cotton at that time. And so building out behavior crisis response, I see the need. I see the increase that we need, right? And I also saw that we need to add more intervention and prevention when it comes to opioids, right? Because when we pulled up in the back of your office, they was back there like they was finna get it. Like they was finna do they love. And that's what I've seen a lot of. And that's what I've been seeing a lot of, even with other different first responders, is that our community members, and I call them community members because they live here too. They just don't have a resident. They don't have a zip code. I mean, an address, right? So they are community members too. And they was, you know, the way that they get upset when they're trying to get high. I'm just gonna say it and use their drug, and and we move them along, and we constantly move them along, and we ask them, do they want services? No, they don't. Some of them don't want services. Some do, some don't, right? But we're not gonna give up on that. We're gonna continue on seeing them every day because we know where they be at, and we're gonna continue on offering them services, and we're gonna continue on making sure that they do not take over these abandoned properties. And I'm not gonna call all of our properties abandoned, right? Because all of our properties are not abandoned, right? I don't want to use that term abandonment. And I also want to just be highly uplifting our crime prevention specialists that we have, Bill Magnuson and Shannon Doherty, And Melissa Mai do a beautiful job in making sure that when our community members call and they talk about a residence that, well, the property is currently maybe being sold or under construction or possibly changing hands, and people, you know, we live in Minnesota, they want to take advantage of that and they may be breaking in and taking carpet and things like that. I do know that our regulatory services department show up, and I also know our crime prevention specialists respond. I've seen it firsthand, and that's exactly what is going on over there on 18th and Bryant, just as well as I can name a couple more hotspots that's within the ward, more than a couple. Everyone is aware of Laurie and Penn. I'm not just going to call that out because Stevie Wonder can see that one, but there are many more that are very small, and I live right behind McDonald's.
Got it. Listen, thank you. We'll have more questions. Let's bring in Miles. Miles, good afternoon. Miles Wilson. And thank you for being here. Take some time and present to our audience who you are and why you're running for City Council for Ward 5.
Absolutely. Well, thank you first and foremost for having me today and for allowing me onto your show. My name is Miles Wilson. I'm born and raised in North Minneapolis, third generation resident of North Minneapolis, meaning my parents, my mother grew up over north in Ward 5, and my grandparents came here in the 1960s. And, you know, the reason that I'm running is because, you know, I being born and raised in the area, I've seen what investments have not happened in North Minneapolis, in Ward 5 specifically. Growing up in the area, I've participated in programs and in parks such as Powell, Jordan, Harrison, Bethune, Hospitality House. I've worked for these parks. I've played sports at these parks. I just grew up in the area. And over time, I've seen how things have been taken away from our community and not been invested in it, invested back into. And, you know, the solution for me is pretty simple. When there's not safety, you don't see an investment. You know, when we look at investments in our own personal lives, we look at investments to be protected, and the same way goes for the wards and the areas that we live in. And so with Ward 5, I look to invest into public safety that's going to help bring in this economic revenue that's going to help offset some of the taxes, such as property taxes. And I believe that, again, that we need to build these relationships, not just with our other leaders, with, you know, it's about having these relationships with the county, with the other council members, with the mayor, with our state representatives, but also with our community, our residents, our business owners. You know, these are people that are invested directly into our community, and we need to be there for them as well. And so, yeah, that's just a little bit about me. I'm a contract analyst, so I write policies that do service life insurance, disability, and supplemental health benefits. And so I have a background that works very closely with legal and compliance. But again, with these measures, you know, these are things that I bring to the table as a candidate for City Council that will reflect into our community, that will show the innovation and solutions that we can create together.
Miles Wilson, what would you say is your highest priority, just the ward's highest priority from your point of view?
The highest priority that I believe that the ward is should have is public safety. When we focus on public safety and having honesty, transparency, and accountability for public safety across all lines in communications, whether that's the police department, whether that is the BCR team, whether that is community safety specialists, and again, amongst residents, then we can really reflect and start foundationally to build this ward up together. We can start to build these avenues of economic development, creating housing solutions, being considerate and conscious of where we're placing housing and how we're, you know, kind of mobilizing together to create these solutions. And so I believe that public safety, and I'm working on public safety as my top priority to really create the change in Ward 5.
I'm Alan McFarland. This is The Conversation with Alan McFarland. I'm interviewing candidates for council for 5th Ward. It's my ward in North Minneapolis. You just heard Miles Wilson, and prior to that, we heard Ethropic Burnett, and we opened the show with a interview that I recorded earlier with Pearl Warren. Next, I'm going to introduce another candidate, Andrea Young. Andrea, welcome to the program, and take a minute or a few minutes and talk about yourself, your candidacy, your vision, your priorities. Welcome.
Thank you. So hello, everyone. My name is Andrea Young. I, too, am born and raised in North Minneapolis, 4-5 specifically. I have spent the last few years working as a community organizer for the Heritage Park Neighborhood Association, which they have elevated me into their executive director. So I'm hitting 1 year as the ED there, coming up soon. My background is kind of in a lot of like coalition spaces. So I'm a part of the Zero Burn Coalition, where we advocate about having the HERC shut down. We also, as a small win this year, we had the opportunity to stop funding from them opening up the county opening up a new facility in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. As well, I am a part of the Blue Line Coalition, where we advocate that it's not about the train, it's about the people. Last year, we were able to go to the Capitol and work with allies at the state to secure $10 million in anti-displacement funding that the Anti-Displacement Community Prosperity Programs Board is working to put back into the community along the corridor of the Blue Line. I'm a part of the Housing Justice League coalition, where we are advocating for TOPA policy to be passed in 2025. And I'm a part of the Bring Back Six Coalition. So we recently just released a report, if you are not aware, about the work that has been done on Sixth Avenue North, which is technically Olson Memorial Highway, and around like Seventh Avenue. In that area, there used to be a thriving Black and Jewish neighborhood that had about 13 restaurants, about 5 jazz bars, but just advocating about reconnecting the communities that have been impacted by Olson Memorial Highway being placed in the community. So that's just a little bit of my background. As far as my vision, personally, I just want to see North Minneapolis invested into. I believe in like economic development and bringing businesses and using some of the vacant parcels to in lots and rezoning and just bringing more opportunity into the ward, which will create subsidies and offset some of those taxes and those burdens that are hitting the residents. I believe that we need to have affordable housing, deeply affordable housing, to help with some of our unhoused individuals, as well as just the residents that currently live in the community and preventing them from continuing to be displaced. We do have displacement happening in the community simply because of rising rents, as well as rising property taxes. And then you also have infrastructure projects like the Blue Line, which brings in development and then it pushes people out. So yeah, I want to make it where the people that have lived in this community, because if you go back to the history of like redlining, we were put here. So for the people that have been here and have been resilient enough to stay here throughout all these years, allowing them to be able to stay placed in the homes that they're in, while also just developing our community for what it deserves to be.
Can you tell me what the demographic profile is of Fifth Ward? Who's in Fifth Ward now?
Go ahead. I would say that Fifth Ward is very diverse. I guess it depends on who you're talking to. We have our African American, we have East Africans, we have Hmong, we have Lao, we have the Latino community, we have the Ecuadorian population, Hispanic. So I mean, I feel like we have elders, we have young people, it's a very diverse community as far as the demographic of individuals that live in the ward.
So the question I'll ask you and the other candidates, too, you guys think about this is, now I don't harp on negative, but I want to face the truth of our history. Why is it that a lot of Northsiders feel like our community has been intentionally and consistently underdeveloped? Who dropped the ball, if anybody did? Maybe there's nobody to blame. But what are your thoughts about why things been the way they are? And more important part of the question, Andrea and the other candidates, because I don't want to get stuck on the past, is where do we go from here? What do we do to become the vibrant, robust, healthy, growing wealthy community that we believe we should be. What do you think?
So I mean, as I've done a lot of work with the Bring Back Six Coalition, to me it seems like the government and the redlining and the history of that is who kind of dropped the ball on the community and making it seem as if it was like this negative place. We were redlined here, we were put here, we were, this area, North Minneapolis was considered like poverty area. Even just thinking about the history with Olson Memorial Highway, the reason why the highway was put in was to be considered as cleaning the space. Sorry, I just want to make sure you're still here. You went away.
You're good. Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. sorry. Okay. So I think that all of that plays a role in the individuals that are currently here in the ward and, you know, the dynamics of how it's made up. And I even think it has a lot to do with how we're how people visualize North Minneapolis specifically when they, in a way of how much we've been invested into in the things that we have received or even just what has been taken away from us as a community. I think going forward, I want to give credit to the community because I do feel like we show up and we advocate our voices. I do think that sometimes, though, it's the same people and we need to get more people out in some of these spaces to continue to elevate our voices and let it be known what we want. For instance, with the Blue Line, I know that there is like a tug and pull in the community on wanting it and not wanting it. But I think that if we stay at the in the forefront of these conversations and we make it clear to the government as to what it is that we want in our community, what we don't want in our community. I think that that is a way to like change our environments, change everything about what is happening in North Minneapolis. And it also sets the tone for what we are willing to accept and what we are not. I had the opportunity to meet with like the North Loop Neighborhood Association, and they talked about how they have like a planning and zoning committee that any development that comes into the North Loop, they have to meet with this group of individuals to basically get confirmation or affirmation, you know what I mean? To decide if what they want can come into their community. Why can't we have the same thing in North Minneapolis? We have great leadership in North Minneapolis of people that represent us that want nothing but the best from us. And if you gave these people the opportunity to continue to elevate those voices while also listening to the community, and you're elevating the community voices in these spaces as well, we will have the things that we not only need, but deserve. And I think that that's important. So I'm a firm believer in like community benefit ordinances and making sure that we have a planning and zoning committee in North Minneapolis, because development is getting ready to happen. But what do we do to make sure that we're getting the things that we not only want, but need, and like I said, deserve in Ward 5 as well?
Miles, let me go back to you. What do you think about how would you describe what has not happened or the reason for the disparate engagement in North Minneapolis in Ward 5? And what do you see as a path forward to building, again, a vibrant and sustainable community? You know, Miles, can I bring, yeah, there you are, Miles. There we are. And yeah, we'll get Miles back in a second. Andrea, you're there. Do we have Ethropic? Let me get Miles back in. There you are. Okay, Miles.
Yeah, I apologize.
Go ahead. Yeah, no problem. And we can all stay on screen here. Go ahead. On the same question, how do you describe to yourself, constituents, the persistence of underdevelopment in Minneapolis, and how do you argue and educate people about what we must do to effectively steward the development of sustainable, productive, positive community? What do you think?
This is for me?
Yes, Miles.
Okay, yep. So, you know, when I think about the economic development, I think about the leaders that we have that are, operating business in Ward 5. Now, I think about the ward itself, you know, from where it kind of the boundaries of the Ward 5, going from Lowry Avenue down to just about Glenwood Avenue, a little bit south of Glenwood Avenue. Far west is Golden Valley, the borderline Minneapolis and Golden Valley, and as far east is the rivers. I kind of use that as kind of a boundary zone to kind of describe to people what's within the wards. We have major corridors. We have Lowry Avenue. We have Broadway Avenue. We have Plymouth Avenue, Glenwood Avenue. We have Washington Avenue. There are all these major corridors. And there's business owners that are here now that are doing the work. It's a matter of continuing to build upon these relationships. It's a matter of continue to support, you know, them and what they are asking for. For example, we have a very nice venue of Royalston Square that's right within Ward 5. It's an immersive, you know, venue that is going to be hosting the virtual Van Gogh display in the next couple months. And there's no signage. Now, there's a city ordinance that doesn't allow sign or that has prevented them from having signage currently. But these are kind of the issues that, you know, we're talking about when we're talking about continuing to build relationships with these owners. Because if they don't get signage, what would happen is they may decide to sell and move their venue to another city, another area that might allow a little bit more support. Again, the safety side of it, you know, just that in that same breath, I was kind of moseying around the ward, just kind of going about the ward, and I came across an area where there were people that were unhoused and in very close vicinity to some of our businesses. And I stopped for a moment, I reflected on the area, and I sat and I talked to the people that were there. And, you know, as I discovered what their kind of services they were looking for, what kind of help they were looking for, I took it upon myself to help clean up the area, help connect them to resources such as Turning Point to get help there, and then call 311 to help do the official cleanup of the area to make sure that it was clean and you know, kind of removed from the area, but from a way of compassion and care. So two things can be true where we can support our businesses and make sure that we continue to grow and thrive in these spaces, to continue to be innovative in our solutions, but getting out on the ground to figure out what people are asking for. And from a, like I mentioned, from a resident's perspective, what kind of businesses do we want to see in this ward? Do we want restaurants? Do we want coffee shops? Do we want bookstores? Do we want co-working spaces? You know, and then working with people, developers, architects, business owners, experts in these areas to help bring these things to this area of Minneapolis. So, and I do believe that, you know, that the it was designed at a point in time to, you know, kind of exclude us from the business development. There's a point in time when Ward 5 was included into part of the downtown area. And we had parts that were, that have, you know, high revenue that would help offset some of these issues that we're facing today, such as, again, property taxes. How do we offset that? Well, one way to offset that is through the support of businesses. And when that was cut, and if you look at the design of the ward now, Ward 5 cuts right underneath or cuts off on the south east side of the ward. The southeast side cuts right underneath Twin Stadium and comes back around the farmer's market and down Glenwood and into the area. So, again, it's working with what we have, but being strong in these stances to really, again, work with our businesses, demand that we get what we're asking for, and being conscious and considerate of what our community is saying that they want so that we can advocate for that at City Hall and with our business owners and with our architects and developers.
Miles, your voice is good, but your video is a challenge because you have the big light behind you. So there we go. That's much, much better. Ethropic, am I saying your name right?
Eutrophic.
Okay. Same question to you. What I wanted to do is get a sense of how you describe what used to be and how you describe why we are where we are. Where we are, from my point of view, is a place where we are still reflecting inequality, lack of full investment. Though there have been some great investments in our community, but we still are, I think, under-resourced in certain ways. That's what I think. I could be wrong, but I'm asking you to describe it from your experience as a policymaker, as a person who worked in the profession, community, and civic life in our community, and as a candidate. How would you describe what ordinary people feel about the lack of resources in North Minneapolis, and how do you bring that into your plan to serve and build, improving the quality of life for Northside Fifth Ward residents?
Well, thank you for that question, Mr. McFarland. First of all, you know, it's not a secret about the racial inequities that we as Black people and people of color have experienced in America for centuries, right? And so the disparities that we have seen is still a continuation of part of that plan, right? That blueprint plan never ended, right? And in order for it to end, it's going to take us to end it. It's going to take us to rewrite another plan, right? And so for me, it's not a secret. I mean, you know, many of people have written reports about the inequities within Minneapolis, especially within North Minneapolis, with the housing, with our schools, within our parks. I mean, we shouldn't have had to fight for years to get to finally get North Commons redone when our counterparts over Northeast was their parks was looking good, right? There's no way that we should continue on fighting with within our school system when our counterparts in other parts of the city schools look better than ours, right? And have more resources, right? And so for me, I understand that was a plan designed to continue to keep us out of it and continue to keep us in a deficit mindset, right? And in a mindset where we always got to be surviving and not thriving, right? And so, and especially these last few years, considering COVID, you know, when COVID hit and the fact of after COVID hit, you know, that was something we never seen before and ever in life, whereas, you know, everybody got to be quarantined. I mean, it was very similar to other health epidemics that we've seen in the past, but it was something that we've never really seen before. So that impacted us a whole lot. Then you got to also think at the time of COVID, we had not just, you know, the murder of George Floyd. Yes, we had the murder of George Floyd here in the city of Minneapolis, where it impacted us. I mean, impacted us to the west, you know, cuz was like, I'm out of here, you know, and community members had to be like, hey, hold on, Cubs, hold on, Unified, cuz Cubs is owned by Unified, right? Cuz it got sold, Jerry Foods got sold out. Hold on, wait a minute. Let's have a conversation, because yes, we understand what happened, but if you leave, we have nothing. Right, we have nothing. So it's about having those conversations. The same thing when Target was like, oh no, I can't, I gotta go. And then we got Cubs, right? And so for me, when it's thinking about, yes, there was always a plan to keep Black and brown communities all over the United States in a deficit mindset. However, we are in a better situation, whereas we have more intellectual power together. And we have more resources together, and we have more people that are in places and spaces that have access to those resources to make for sure that we get it right. And so for me, it is about what is the business. All of us know, as the candidates, we know that yes, we all we've heard on these doors, and we've heard in community for years that yes, and seen it as myself, that someone who lives here, there is no way that I have to go somewhere else to have a sit down meal. There's nowhere. Why should I take my dollar outside of the community? Why should I take my dollar outside to Robbinsdale to get coffee? You know, why should I have to go to Robbinsdale? And I don't go to Robbinsdale because we got Misfits down the street here, right? So we got some coffee shops, but we also need a baker. There are a number of things that amenities and essentials. I don't even like calling them amenities, because your basic need is not amenity, right? You having a sit down restaurant, it's not an amenity. It's something that's what's needed, because we know that we need to eat healthy in order to live, right? But also when we are thinking about bringing these businesses outside of people's homes and inside the cultural corridors, We also have to make sure that we are addressing our livability and our public safety issues right along with that to make sure our businesses stay. We have to make sure that we give them the resources, not just to open, but to stay open, right? And especially during this federal administration where dollars are like, whoo, they gone, right? We ain't getting no money. You know, we're not going to get nothing. So the little surplus that we have left over here at the state of Minnesota, we have to figure out how we're going to keep what we have and distribute it in a way that's going to be equitable and making sure that it's going to be equitable in a way that we can see the long-term investment, right? So we know that the light rail is coming. I knew the light rail was coming when I bought my house over here 15 years ago because Hennepin County borders Carver County. And they had to have those conversations about it. So therefore, I was there at the seat of the table. I knew about Upper Harbor Terminal. Why? Because they was having those meetings at the park board. And I was bringing residents along and like, hey, you know this is coming. You know this is coming. You know this is coming. You know the light rail is coming. So it's about having our voices at the table beforehand. Andrea spoke about planning. North Loop got that planning commission out the NRP money. So the NRP money is neighborhood revitalization plan money. Every neighborhood, such as Hawthorne, Jordan, Newark, Sumner, Glenwood, Willahay, they can all come together and come together with and make a planning commission utilizing the small funds they do have left out of that $400 million that it started with, right? It's only a small amount of money left. However, there is no way that we can say that other neighborhoods can do it and we can't. We can have our own planning commission. Yes, I do believe in a tenant opportunity to purchase act. I wish this current city council would have voted on it and kept and stopped playing ping pong with that issue and playing ping pong with our people. I also believe in community opportunity to purchase. Burger King's been sitting vacant since 2020. Mm-hmm. We have so many vacant buildings that it doesn't make no sense. The bricks empty, right? I am very grateful that Tim Baylor, he's bought the building behind right there next to you where he's going to build senior living. He's going to have another spot where bricks used to be at. So we're going to have to continue on making sure that the Tim Baylors of the world, yes, and the future Tim Baylors of the world and the future Jameel Fords and Paul Bucknight, such as architect, and making sure that the people that live here who have that intellectual property for architect, for design, they on that planning commission. They bring our young students. They bring our students from North High, our students from Camden into that workshop so that therefore they can say, hey, this is what we want to see. These are the amenities that's going to be missing in the next 5-10 years to come because we're going to be seniors. So it is our job to make for sure that we take what we have, that we utilize the resources with the architects, the Black architects that we do have, that we work with our Black developers that we do have within the ward that is building housing. How do we make for sure that we give them the resources and that we work with our young people and them is also to build up that economic development along all the corridors in the ward?
Let me ask the three of you to talk about the question of transit-oriented development. You mentioned architect Paul Bucknight. They had a major hearing last week down here at UROC on the light rail. Would you each describe what you are hearing and what you are standing for in the discussion about light rail in Fifth Ward? Andrea, start with you. Andrew, did you hear me? She might not have heard me. Miles, did you hear my question?
I did.
Why don't you start? Andrew, you come next, okay? Okay, Miles first.
Yeah, so the things I've been hearing along, you know, the transit and transportation is the uncertainty of how that shapes our ward. Based off of previous developments of the same transportation in terms of the light rail, you know, for example, the Green Line into St. Paul, you know, there's a fear that plays a role into what that looks like from separating our ward and being another rondo. There's also an excitement that goes behind, from what I've heard from residents, that goes behind the light rail as well, you know. So in terms of accessibility and what this train could do, you know, in terms of the dollars that it might bring in. So I've heard it on both sides of that the fence there. You know, and when I think about it, and I think about the light rail, and I think about the light rail that we currently have in the city, you know, my biggest you know, pushback, or my biggest skepticism and pushback on that would be around the safety of the light rail, as well as the separation of the ward. Meaning we have platforms that aren't gated, that aren't, you know, are that you could access at any point in time, that you could get on a train at any point in time. You don't have to pay fares. You might have transit police hop on every once in a while. You know, when we have just kind of a free range train, safety becomes my biggest concern, as well as being on the ground level. You know, we had talked about kids and families and elders that are all within our ward. And, you know, as this train is projected to come down, you know, and basically disrupt a community that has a lot of families in the area, you know, I think about the safety for our families and our children in the area as well. Now, the development side, I can't deny in terms of saying, you know, with the amount of development dollars that would come into the ward, it's something that I absolutely would advocate and support because of what it can do under those constraints of having being safe, under the constraints that it really serves our community in the way that is intended. So where when I take a step back and I listen to the voice of the community and I listen to where people are at, you know, I think about the development of Broadway. I think of development of the ward overall. And I think that this can and will be something positive for the ward. You know, there's just something like Ms. E said, there's something that's been on the books for a while, and something that if we don't get behind, what would happen is that we get left behind. You know, they will continue to develop the train and we won't see the benefit for the ward as it should and it could be intended for. So,
Andrea, what's your take on this? What discussion are you hearing and where do you fall in terms of the options for community in mass transit, light rail in particular?
Yeah, so I actually take up two spaces when it comes to the train. So again, I'm a part of the Blue Line Coalition where we advocate that it's not about the train, it's about the people. So we try to make sure that we show up in spaces with the project team or at the Capitol, if that's what it requires, or even with representatives to just continue to elevate the needs in the community to make sure that people aren't displaced, to make sure that businesses are able to thrive and stay in the community. And we also think about the before, during, and after construction phases. And then I'm also a cohort member. So in that space, I, again, sit down with project team where they update us and give us information and we share that information out and try to educate the community. Even at one point, we were hosting a lot of events just to keep the community informed. Me personally, I have had the opportunity to kind of like travel to different places in the world. And I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for a while. And I do understand the importance of transit infrastructure projects and getting you around. We live in a world where a lot of people do not own vehicles. So I do think that that could alleviate some of that stress. I also see the opportunity of connecting people to other resources outside of our community, whether that mean going to Hennepin Tech for college, MCTC for college, or going to the Mall of America for a job. I mean, of course, we want to make sure that we are bringing opportunities into the community, but there are people who prefer to work outside of the community as well. So, you know, just creating that sense of opportunity. You have the development side as well when it comes to developing the community. I know with the $10 million that we advocated for in anti-displacement funding, that, again, is for this, but it is for a mile and a half along the route of the corridor of the train. So not only is that, you know, along Broadway or Highway 81, that will also, again, touch on some of our other major corridors along the route to be developed as well. So it brings in this money. I mean, I've been attending stuff, you know, meetings and info sessions and the dream sessions and everything for about 2 years now. I've probably been at the table just listening and hearing. I've heard a lot. I've heard the ups and the downs, the concerns, the happiness, the joys, the things that have allowed to alter what is going to happen, shape how many stops there'll be, determine what street it'll go down because it's been rerouted a couple times. So, you know, I've been in these spaces and I've heard a lot. I do personally believe that this will change our community. I do think that it is something that is going to create opportunity for our community. But we just got to continue to be at the forefront in these tables. Like I said, we have to make sure that we're elevating our voices and continuing to share. I think even me and my experience for, like I said, just bringing in the Bring Back Six work and learning the history of Minneapolis or Minnesota in general and how they did things to us, I even feel like the project team has learned from Rondo in a way, right? So in the with Rondo, the community was behind the conversation, and that is why a lot of the things happened to them the way they did. I do feel like us as residents of North Minneapolis, we have came to the table. We have elevated our voices in the government entity, whether that be the county, Met Council. They are listening to us. They are making decisions based off of the things that we want. Like he said, the platforms are being lowered, or, you know, they're having Braille on them, or like these are all things that residents have shared that they want. We have more than one stop in North Minneapolis. We're going to have a land bridge. Like, these are things that community has elevated that we probably wouldn't never get. I'm not going to say never. I believe that these are possible, but it probably wouldn't happen in the grace period that is happening or going to happen for us if this project wasn't happening. But yeah, I mean, it is signed off. I know that it's now signed off by the Federal Transit Administration. There will be, the funding is going to come through them. But yeah, I think that the community just needs to stay in the rooms, in these spaces, continue to show up and say what it is that they want and don't want. And I think that this project could work out for us. My only biggest concern is just, again, bringing up the work with the Bring Back Six Coalition and learning how Olson Memorial Highway is like divided these communities. That will be my only concern for the infrastructure project of the Blue Line train, it dividing the communities and them not feeling connected. So that will be my biggest issue, but I do think that it has the potential to be something great.
E, what are you hearing? What do you think?
Well, I'm first and foremost grateful to see and then know that in these last 5 years, community has really been actively engaged in the process. Like I stated earlier, there are planning commissions at the city level, right? Community planning commissions at the county level, at the state level. And so for me, knowing that this light rail basically was in plans due to the 2010 census, right? So every time we have a census, we make plans, right? And so our last census is going to bring us some new plans, right? Because the census tells us how many people to expect, if we're going to have buses, trains, schools, clinics, pre-K, daycares, all of that, right? So this light rail conversation came out of the 2010 census, right? And I'm also very grateful that when I bought my house over here, that I did the research prior to me coming, and I started going to those meetings. I was picking up those postcards and Chad Switters, and he made me go and bring tenants and having an understanding that Met Council at that time, right? And Gary Cunningham's bringing people to UROC and bringing, you know, Mita and all that, explaining to us. I would love to see more then, but that's then. And I know that our eyes are wide open now. Since COVID and the murder of George Floyd, our eyes are open and we're more open to equity. We're more open to what?
You'd love to see more what? What did you say?
I said, since COVID and
the murder. You would love to see more something. What did you say?
No, I said our eyes are wide open now.
Okay.
And we can, and more equity. Our voices are like, hey, where our voices are being more elevated, more and more want to be more inclusive. That I would say, especially since 2020, but I will say that it needs to be more, right? And when it does come to the light rail, you know, yes, I will say that the team has heard community for a very long time was saying, hey, we don't want what happened to Southside for 35W. We don't want what happened when y'all built 94. We don't want what happened when you did the Black and Brown community in St. Paul, not once, but twice, right? We want to make sure that don't happen over here. So making for sure that we're not a pass through. We're not just a pass through that you're just going to come here and just ride through North Minneapolis and just like, are we just looking out the window? No, we want you to get off. We want you to patronize the businesses, right? We want you to, yes, we want our riders to feel safe. We want to make sure that we give our community members opportunity. But first and foremost, what does it look like to give opportunity for those designers to design that infrastructure, right? We have a lot of architects already within North Minneapolis between both wards, the fifth and the fourth. We have enough architect intellectual property that we should have been at that table, right? And continue to stay at the table and make sure that we bring our young people to that table, right? Because they're the ones that's going to really benefit, right? They're the ones that we're doing it for. So we need them at the table, not at the end, but at the beginning of it. Because more than likely, our young people and our single moms, and we're going to be taking that public transportation back and forth, looking for those jobs, looking for those opportunities, right? And so we want to make sure that they're at the table as well. And yes, and making sure that we're not just going to have jobs from building the light rail, from MnDOT to CenterPoint Energy to Xcel Energy to the cable companies. We want jobs in every aspect of building this light rail out. It's not just with one. It is with MnDOT. CenterPoint Energy got a contract. Xcel Energy got a contract. And the cable people got a contract. So therefore, those are four different avenues on top of infrastructure and design that our young people can get into. To be a planner coming out of high school with a two-year degree, maybe two-year degree in college, you guaranteed $120,000 or more. What benefit do we